This program is provided by lawyer Kyungjin Kim.
What if I told you that the most powerful AI chip unveiled in China this week wasn't actually built using bleeding-edge technology?
Right, it's actually using manufacturing hardware from a decade ago.
Yeah, exactly. So today we're looking at a July 14th intelligence report that really proves the global tech industry isn't just, bending the rules of
Oh,
innovation.
definitely don't.
It's completely rewriting the calendar, the global supply chain, and, well, very likely your actual job description. So welcome to today's deep dive.
And we're dissecting a remarkably dense report provided to us by lawyer Kyung Jin Kim, a former lawmaker. He has curated this stack of seemingly isolated updates from the past week,
Right.
and he weaves them together with just incredibly insightful commentary.
Which is great because our mission today for you listening right now is to cut straight through all that noise. We really want to move past the endless hype and the sci-fi speculation of artificial intelligence.
Yeah, and look at the physical, financial, and practical realities of what is actually happening on the ground today. And lawyer Kyung Jin Kim lays out a really brilliant through line for these updates. He points out that whether we are talking about, say, a silicon factory in Shanghai, or a server farm in Beijing, or a government office in Seoul,
They're all connected.
right, they all seamlessly connect across three main pillars, which are the supply chain, the sheer volume of global production, and ultimately your actual workplace.
So let's start with the physical foundation of AI, which is, of course, the silicon itself.
Right, the chips.
Yeah. For a long time, the global semiconductor race has been totally obsessed with something called the process node, getting down to 5 nanometers, 3 nanometers.
Basically shrinking the microscopic pathways on a chip so you can cram, more processing power onto a single flat piece of silicon.
Right. And U.S. export controls have heavily targeted those exact microprocessing sizes to limit China's AI capabilities. Like, the line in the sand was based entirely on miniaturization.
Yeah, and the underlying assumption there was that if you restrict access to the extreme ultraviolet lithography machines,
The EUV machines.
exactly, the ones needed for that ultra-fine miniaturization. If you restrict those, you essentially bottleneck a nation's computing power. You build a concrete wall they just can't drive through.
But then on July 13th in Shanghai, a new Chinese AI chip was unveiled that kind of turns that whole assumption on its head.
It really does.
It uses an older 14 nanometer process. And by modern standards, 14 nanometer is, well, it's legacy tech, it's bulky.
Very bulky.
Yet despite using this older process, this chip achieves a staggering 520 trillion floating point operations per second. That's 520 TOPS.
Which is huge.
And a memory access bandwidth of 6.4 terabytes per second. So how is an older, bulkier process putting up those kinds of numbers?
Well, they did it by shifting the entire paradigm from the process node to structural engineering. They stopped trying to shrink the microscopic pathways and just changed how the microscopic cities build entirely.
Okay, how so?
Historically, chips lay flat. You have your computing unit sitting here and your memory storage unit sitting over there.
Right, side by side.
Yeah. And data has to constantly travel back and forth across that flat surface.
Yeah.
Now, in AI, you are moving so much data that the processor ends up just sitting idle, waiting for the data to arrive. The industry calls this the memory wall.
Wait, so the bottleneck isn't the speed of the processor itself, it's the commute time for the data.
Precisely. And that commute generates a massive amount of heat and consumes huge amounts of power. So to bypass this memory wall, this new chip uses a software-defined architecture combined with 3D near-memory computing.
3D computing.
They simply stopped building flat. They took the computing and storage units and stacked them vertically on top of each other.
Okay, let's unpack this. It's like being told you aren't allowed to build a wider, faster highway to move your cargo.
Right.
So instead, you just build a massive double-decker bridge to get the same amount of traffic through. You just stack the lanes.
That is a perfect physical analogy.
Yeah.
By stacking vertically, the data doesn't have to travel across a flat highway anymore. It is right there, instantly accessible. They achieved that 6.4 terabytes per second bandwidth by literally closing the physical distance at a microscopic level. It completely alleviates that memory wall bottleneck.
But I mean, is this kind of structural workaround actually a viable long-term strategy? Because it sounds a little bit like a desperate band-aid. Like, can you really just keep stacking things to bypass process limitations?
Well, lawyer Kyung Jin Kim's commentary provides a fantastic historical precedent here. This isn't the first time the semiconductor industry has seen this kind of tectonic pivot.
When did it happen before?
Back in the 1980s. Intel was fighting this brutal war in the DRAM memory market against Japanese manufacturers. And Intel was losing badly because the Japanese firms just had superior manufacturing yields.
Right.
So instead of continuing to collide head-on in a market they couldn't win, Intel bypassed it completely. They abandoned memory chips and pivoted entirely to microprocessors.
Oh, wow. So they changed the game they were playing because they couldn't win the current one.
Yes, exactly. The export controls aimed at the process node, but the industry just, you know, found a different door to walk through out of sheer desperate demand for AI compute power.
And if you want undeniable proof that this global demand isn't just some theoretical tech bubble, we really need to look at what's happening over in Taiwan right now.
Oh, yeah, the TSMC numbers.
Yeah. TSMC, the world's largest contract chip maker, just released their June revenue numbers, and the numbers are just staggering.
They really are.
They reported revenue of 442.68 billion new Taiwan dollars. That is roughly 13.8 billion U.S. dollars in a single month.
Wow.
It's their highest revenue in a 40-year history, up almost 68% year over year. For the second quarter overall, they hit 1.27 trillion, which is a 36% jump from last year.
And what is truly anomalous here isn't just the sheer size of the revenue, it's the timing on the calendar. Because for the last 4 years, TSMC's June revenue has always dropped compared to May.
Right, because of the seasonal cycle of consumer products. You know, you gear up for holiday releases, you have lulls in the summer. The calendar usually dictates the cash flow for tech manufacturing.
Exactly. Smartphones, laptops, they all follow a very predictable seasonal rhythm. But this year, June revenue actually grew by 6.2% month over month.
Unbelievable.
The traditional calendar has literally been rewritten by AI demand. That seasonal slump just evaporated.
Hold on, though. I have to stop you there. Because Wall Street has spent the last 2 weeks screaming that this entire AI rollout is a massive capital expenditure bubble.
Right, the bubble fears.
Yeah, they are terrified that companies are hoarding chips they'll never see a return on. So how do these record-breaking TSMC numbers not just confirm that bubble? Aren't these tech giants just buying hardware they don't actually need yet?
Well, this is where lawyer Kyung-jin Kim makes a crucial distinction for us. He notes that stock prices reflect human psychology and anxiety, but revenue reflects actual signed orders.
Yeah.
And the physical build-out is aggressively real. TSMC's 3-nanometer production lines are fully booked. But more importantly, their advanced CoWoS packaging is completely sold out through the end of the year.
Wait, CoWoS packaging, what is that specifically?
It stands for chip on wafer on substrate. It is the advanced manufacturing technique used to wire different chips together into a single massive brain.
Okay.
It's incredibly complex to do. And you don't book billions of dollars in non-refundable manufacturing capacity for CoWoS based on a speculative bubble. You book it because you have immediate critical deployments that require that hardware to function right now.
Okay, so the hardware investment is undeniably real, and it's supporting a software ecosystem that is maturing at light speed. Which kind of brings us to a massive shift in the financial markets regarding the software landscape over in China.
Yeah, the money is definitely moving.
Because despite the geopolitical tensions and the hardware export controls we just talked about, the money is ignoring the borders entirely. Goldman Sachs has officially initiated coverage on Chinese AI model companies.
Right.
They are naming unlisted companies like DeepSeek and ByteDance as their top picks, and they just slapped a $110 billion valuation target on Zipu.
And the implication for you as an observer here is profound. I mean, an American investment bank is now actively pitching Chinese AI models to its clients as formal viable investments.
That's a huge shift.
It is. They are projecting that API and subscription revenues for these Chinese AI models will jump from about 35 billion yuan in 2026 to 879 billion yuan by 2030.
Wow, 879 billion.
It's an explosive growth curve. It's a massive signal that the raw price competitiveness and performance of these models are really starting to overcome that geopolitical reluctance.
But wait, with all this capital flowing in and these models getting so powerful, there have to be guardrails? I mean, it can't just be a free-for-all, right?
Right. And we are seeing those pop up globally. Sure. This report outlines a major one. On July 15th, China's new interim measures for AI anthropomorphic interaction service management actually took effect.
Anthropomorphic interaction. So treating the AI like a person.
Exactly. It means strict boundaries on how AI can mimic human emotional connection.
Yeah.
Providers of emotion-based chatbots now have to go through rigorous algorithm security checks.
Okay.
And crucially, it flat-out bans virtual lover services that target minors.
Which cuts off a massive revenue stream. Because consumer-facing AI chatbots are incredibly popular right now.
They are, and the tech giants saw this coming. By July 13th, so 2 days before the rules even took effect, Alibaba's Tongyi Kanawan and ByteDance's Dubao had already pulled their user-created consumer agent features.
Oh, wow. They move fast.
Yeah. They removed the ability for consumers to create highly personalized anthropomorphic agents just to ensure compliance with the new guardrails.
So if the government is actively banning these personalized AI agents on the consumer side, how is that trickling down to the developers who are actually writing the code? Because there's a deadline in this report that developers need to act on immediately.
Yes, the July 24th deadline for DeepSeek API users.
Right.
At 15.59 UTC on July 24th, DeepSeek is completely shutting down their old models, specifically the DeepSeek Chat and DeepSeek Reasoner models.
Shutting down completely.
Yes. If you are a developer calling those models in your code after that exact minute, the calls will just fail.
So what is the physical action item here for developers?
You have to go into your code, find the model value, and change the model name to either DeepSeek-V4 Pro or DeepSeek V4 Flash.
Okay, what's the difference?
Well, the Pro model is massive. It's a 1.6 trillion total parameter model, but it only uses about 49 billion active parameters for any given prompt.
Wait, 49 billion active? What are the other 1.5 trillion parameters doing, just taking a nap?
Well, think of it like a massive hospital with 1.6 trillion doctors on staff. If you walk in with a broken arm, you don't need every single doctor in the building to examine you.
Right, that would be chaotic.
Exactly. The system only pages the 49 billion orthopedic specialists who actually know how to treat that exact injury. The industry calls this a mixture of experts model.
Ah.
It saves a massive amount of computing power while still maintaining vast knowledge. The Flash model, on the other hand, is much lighter. It has 284 billion total and 13 billion active parameters.
And here is the warning for developers. If you are currently using the Reasoner model for heavy, complex logic tasks and you do nothing.
Yeah, this is critical.
Right now, the system is quietly routing you to the Flash model as a temporary bridge. But Flash is the lighter model. So if you don't manually go in and specify the Pro model for your heavy tasks, your quality is just going to mysteriously drop and you might not even realize why.
It's a silent downgrade.
Yeah.
And there was another major shift coming with V4 that developers really need to budget for, which is time-of-day pricing.
This is wild to me. It's literally Uber surge pricing for artificial intelligence.
It really is. AI data centers consume vast amounts of electricity. So during peak Beijing hours, which they define as 09.00 to 12.00 and 14.00 to 18.00, the API pricing actually doubles.
Doubles, wow.
Yeah, it's designed to balance the load on the grid and the servers. So smart developers need to look at their workflows right now. If you have heavy batch processing or tasks that can wait, you need to schedule them for the night shift during those off-peak hours to optimize your costs.
Because as compute becomes a utility, it just gets priced like a utility, just like peak electricity.
Exactly. And there's one more technical shift here that completely changes the developer workflow, and that's the context window.
Oh, right.
All the new models now come with a standard 1 million token context window. For years, the biggest headache for developers was pre-processing data.
Because if you had a massive legal document, you couldn't just feed it to the AI all at once.
Right. You had to carefully chunk it up, feed it in pieces, and try to write complex code to maintain the context between all those chunks. With a 1 million token window, that entire pre-processing step is essentially obsolete. You just drop the whole document in.
Which is a huge time saver. Now, I have to mention the rumor mill briefly, because this report notes that the tech world is swirling with unconfirmed reports right now that Google is targeting July 17th to launch Gemini 3.5 Pro.
Rumors are everywhere.
Yeah, and the whispers are that it will feature a 2 million token context window and a new deep sync reasoning layer.
It is crucial to ground that rumor, though.
Fair.
The report is very clear on this. As of July 13th, Google has released zero official model cards, no pricing pages, and absolutely no API documentation to support this. It is entirely unconfirmed information.
Fair enough. We will stick to the facts. But whether it's 1 million tokens today or 2 million tokens tomorrow, this incredible surge in context windows and processing power isn't just a Silicon Valley or Beijing developer story anymore.
No, it's everywhere.
Today, this technology is landing directly on the desk of the everyday government worker in South Korea.
Yes, and this is where the abstract technology becomes a tangible workplace revolution. On July 14th, South Korea launched a pilot of an AI legal assistant, rolling out to all civil servants across all ministries.
All of them?
Yes. This was co-developed by the Ministry of Government Legislation, the Ministry of the Interior and Safety, and the Ministry of Science and ICT.
And what's under the hood of this thing is incredible. It has ingested 60,000 Supreme Court precedents, 240,000 laws and administrative rules, and 50,000 local regulations from five major regions like Seoul and Gyeonggi.
And the real game changer here isn't just the sheer volume of data, it's how the tool was built. It wasn't outsourced to some random external tech company or just slapped together as a wrapper for ChatGPT.
Right.
It was built internally by civil servants themselves on their secure OnAI Lab internal network.
But wait, why does an internal build matter so much compared to an off-the-shelf product?
Because legal and administrative queries have a very specific grain to them. Every government agency asks questions slightly differently based on their specific regulatory focus.
Okay, that makes sense.
Because this tool was built by the people who actually know that specific institutional knowledge, it doesn't act like a generic search engine that just spits out a list of links.
Right, it's more tailored.
Exactly. It acts like a true consultant, synthesizing the exact legal nuance the civil servant needs safely behind government firewalls.
So think about your own industry for a second. If you are a lawyer whose entire billable hour is based on finding a needle in a haystack of legal precedent,
which can take hours or days.
Right. What happens to your mortgage when a government clerk's software finds that exact needle in 3 minutes for free?
Well, this is where lawyer Kunjin Kim's commentary as a legal professional is just piercing. He points out that moving forward, administrative rulings and government actions are going to become incredibly dense and impeccably well-founded.
Right.
For lawyers on the other side, or professionals in any field really, relying on routine, habit-driven paperwork is suddenly incredibly dangerous.
Because you'll get caught out.
Exactly. If you just submit a standard boilerplate opinion, your lack of depth is going to be exposed instantly by an AI that has cross-referenced 500,000 documents in the time it took you to drink your coffee.
So if the AI knows all the rules perfectly, what is the survival strategy for the human professional?
Lawyer Kim outlines a very clear professional pivot here. He argues that professionals must immediately abandon the routine and pivot to what the AI cannot do.
Which is what?
Well, the AI has the historical data, but it doesn't have human intuition. He says the future belongs to those who dig into the messy, undigitized facts of a live case.
The human element.
Right. Those who can read the hidden intentions and psychological motivations of the opposing party, and most importantly, those who can build entirely new logic in the blank spaces where no precedent exists.
Building in the blank spaces, I love that, because an AI is fundamentally backward-looking.
Right, it is.
It predicts the next word based on what has already been written. It relies entirely on precedent, but human ingenuity happens when we face a situation that has literally never happened before.
Exactly. If the tool can perfectly summarize the past, your value is entirely tied to how you navigate the unprecedented future.
So let's zoom out and recap the journey we just took today. We started in Shanghai with a clever 3D hardware workaround, stacking memory vertically to bypass a bottleneck of trade restrictions.
Right.
Then we saw that desperate hardware demand physically break the historical seasonal calendar for TSMC in Taiwan. We watched American banks confidently value Chinese software models at over $100 billion, while regulators simultaneously put up strict guardrails around human-AI interaction.
We saw API surge pricing hitting developers' desks.
Yes, the Uber pricing. And finally, we saw civil servants armed with a robot legal brain that has digested the entire history of a nation's laws.
And through all of it, lawyer Kim's thesis holds true. The supply chain, the production volume, and the reality of your workplace are deeply, inextricably linked. The hardware adaptations lead directly to the software capabilities, which land directly on your desk.
So the real question you need to ask yourself today isn't whether AI is an economic bubble or when the next chip is coming out. The real question is, what happens to your value when the routine, precedent-based parts of your job can be done flawlessly in 3 minutes?
Which leaves us with a final thought to mull over.
Yeah.
If AI eventually masters the ability to perfectly navigate all existing rules, all past precedents, and all historical data, will the future of human professional value lie entirely in our ability to be unpredictable? Like, will the most valuable, highly compensated skill in the modern economy simply be our unique human capacity to break the old rules to create new ones?
That is a fascinating question. If the AI is the ultimate machine for summarizing the past, maybe our job is just to figure out where to point it and then go build the future ourselves. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Take a hard look at your workday tomorrow, find the messy, unpredictable, unautomatable tasks, and lean into them. We'll catch you next time.
This program is provided by Lawyer Kyungjin Kim.